I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks, and the world of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt.
Ooh, Scott Johnson, do we have a nice, fresh variety of geeky stories to start off people's weekend this week?
They're certified fresh, are they?
Yeah, no, we have artisan-made, subreddit-harvested, single-origin stories in a variety of flavors.
Great. Farm to table. That's all I needed to hear. We're good. Great, because I love those kind of stories. We'll get into those in a second. But as always here on the Current Geek Show, Tom and I have guests. Let us start with Nancy Fry. She's an actress, a model, a writer, a cat herder, an AV geek, tabletop gamer, player, character, and more. Nancy, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. You hail from LA. Am I right in thinking that?
No, I'm up here in Washington State.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, right across from Daryl, actually.
So oh, good. So he's real close, and if anything ever went down, Daryl would be there to help you, I promise.
He'd be on that boat and on his way over, I betcha.
Well, it's great to have you here. Also joining us, Jaime Ruiz Alvia. I never say it right. He's a tech guy. He's also a physicist and inventor of the robotic mythical creatures. And last time he was on, we talked all about his rad holographic technology and stuff he was working on. Jaime, it's great to have you back, man.
It's a pleasure to be here, Scott. I love Current Geek, and I am looking forward to some geeky stories.
Sweet. I'm glad you got here safe. You just got home from Mexico, so that's good. You know, they're home. There's no more things to land or planes to park. You're in the house.
I feel like there's the makings of a joke here. An actress, a physicist, and two podcast hosts walk into a bar.
I want to know what that punchline is, though. What would it end up being? Because I don't know. Maybe by the end of the show, the chat room will come up with one, because we don't know
how
to end that joke.
All on Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we're going to dive right into said headlines with this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
This was a hot topic on our subreddit this week. If you're missing out on the subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com, you got to get over there, because they were talking t-shirts. Ars Technica's Willie Clark has a look at the t-shirt websites and how they stay in business in a world of copyright enforcement and online shopping. One clue is no inventory. They don't have to keep warehouse because it's online. They just print the shirts as they're ordered. Designs are usually covered under parody or fair use. At least that's what the t-shirt companies think. Another option is the marketplace approach, where the company just sells the shirts and the people submit the designs. So then they operate with safe harbor. Infringing designs are taken down upon notice, but they don't police it. Of course, the designers are always looking out to stop people from copying their own designs. That's a whole section in there as well. And companies aren't really going after these t-shirt folks, because the money is small and the community backlash would be big. But if you've ever wondered about all these snorbs and fancy t-shirt places, it's an in-depth look at them.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I didn't realize there was a mandate to do this, but I have to admit, I've always been curious. I've made some of my own shirts and had to go after a couple of these shirt companies for using art they found on my store or somewhere on my site and using it for their shirts. And I had to do takedown notices. And then in a couple of cases, the art I had originally done would be kind of a parody thing from the comics perspective, but never intended to be sold on something else. So they were infringing on both the art I had done as parody about, like, say, a Nintendo thing, which Nintendo doesn't want you putting stuff up that's got their stuff on it. So,
well, one thing in this article that they mentioned Nintendo specifically. They say, look, if you draw Zelda and it's obviously Zelda, but you don't say it's Zelda, Nintendo won't come after you. As soon as you put anything on there that labels it or use one of their logos, then they will bring the hammer.
All right. Well, that's actually good to know. Maybe I can get away with more than I thought I could. That's very curious. Jaime, you ever wonder about the darker, deeper depths of the weird t-shirt environment the internet has brought to us?
Yes. I find it. I think what they are, they become our sigils. You know how in the Middle Ages, the knights would wear their house shield and coat of arms and stuff. And I think that we you know, as geeks, we look for them and search. And they have to be very original. They have to be very interesting. Today I saw something amazing. And I saw something amazing in Mexico at the airport. There was a shirt that had a an ice cream sandwich in the shape of Darth Vader.
At the airport.
It was, I wish I could, I wasn't running and I could buy a bunch of those.
Yeah.
And it said, translated, it said el lado oscuro, which is the dark side. But the first word is the word for ice cream. Helado. Yeah.
So, really? Weird. A dark side of ice
just
cream.
Blew me away.
Yeah, no, so, but yeah, when I was in Mexico, I noticed, when I was in China, same thing. I noticed that
they don't get it.
It's pretty good. I don't think they care about that stuff so much when you get out of our borders. It's when you're inside these borders that I fear Disney and their lawyers, because they are scary. So the idea that these t-shirt companies could sort of, you know, make lots and lots of Star Wars references, and that is probably the number one thing. If you go to any of these sites and look around, it's all Star Wars references, and they're all very obviously that's what drives them to be sold.
Right.
I guess I don't understand copyright law and stuff enough to understand the parody laws enough to understand why Disney doesn't just do a big fat takedown of everything all the time. Or is it just a volume thing?
Well, again, it's money and backlash, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't get that much money out of these companies, and they would have this huge community backlash about how mad they are that Disney is squashing their favorite t-shirt company.
Sure. Right. Nancy, you got any shirts that you're like, I don't know if these should be allowed or not, but you got them anyway.
I do a little bit of graphics work myself, and I do things for some local festivals and things. And I'm tempted to use other, you know, geeky things in my work. And I think, well, if it's just us for our local festival in this town, who's going to care? But in this day and age, everything goes up on the internet.
Yeah.
And I there's fair use and there's fair use. And especially with Disney is so heavy handed.
Yeah.
So I would never, never use any Disney thing without getting a license first.
Yeah. It's funny because I feel like it's changed over time. I used to, be a little bit in fear of Marvel. They came after me once because it was DC, because I drew some of their characters all fat. And I called them Fat Batman, Fat Flash or whatever. And they were just really big, obese versions of the characters. And I actually wasn't even selling those. They were just up on the site. And I got a cease and desist in like 2004 or something. Now, that's 04. That was a long time ago. Social media didn't exist, certainly not the way it does now. Like, I think that there's probably been, and Tom can speak to this better than me, but there's probably been some turn in these corporations where they embrace some of this because fandom generates interest, which generates sales, even if there's some stuff at the bottom end they don't get their hands on. Do you think that's happening?
Certainly a part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Anyway.
Well, and it's also, there's the risk versus reward, like we're saying. There's the, it's actually free marketing for us. And there's the risk of setting a precedent. You go after enough of these people and eventually somebody fights back, and then a court says, well, wait a minute. Why does your 90-year-old, property still deserve protection?
Mm-hmm.
These are parts of the public mythology, and we're going to rule against you. And no company wants to risk that. So in some ways, they let it happen because they know it isn't going to hurt anything really, and they don't want to have the law change on them.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting how this stuff has been playing out lately. And I can tell you, as a guy who's actually been at a Comic-Con and had a table and sold artwork there, when I put up my little baby Groot and realized that it's selling well, in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Am I supposed to be doing this? Bob Iger going to swoop out of nowhere in a black cape?
I didn't think that was a baby Groot. That was a baby woodland stick.
Yes, it was a woodland twig.
Greet.
It was a forest dwelling homunculus.
Yeah. He calls himself Greet. I am Greet.
Because he greets you.
Yeah, because he says hi all the time.
Hey, you guys read The Martian by Andy Weir, or at least saw the movie, right?
I did both of those things.
Yeah, I read the bleep out of it.
Yeah.
Andy Weir is back with a new book this fall called Artemis. It's due out November 14th. The story follows Jasmine Bashara, a.k.a. Jazz, who yearns to leave her boring small town life in Artemis, the first and only city on the moon. Jazz works as a porter and finds herself caught up in a life of crime when her side hustle as a smuggler leads to her becoming caught in the middle of a shadowy conspiracy of opposing forces trying to control the town of Artemis.
Ooh, this is so my, this is so right up my alley. It almost hurts. I can't wait.
I'm in.
Yeah. So the cool thing about The Martian was, at least I think, having read that, there were two cool things. One, the author, Andy Weir, is a ex-Blizzard employee and made a lot of video games I enjoyed back in the day. So I like that part of it. But also, there was a lot of science in that. So even though it was like sort of near, semi-near future and doing things we are not currently capable of doing, it felt grounded in real science, in real physics, in real stuff, especially the book. The movie made some shortcuts, but it really worked on that level for me. This is like a whole new way to explore that by looking at, you know, moon colonization and what happens there and how would you get into a life of crime if you're in this small town? Would it be like a small town in the 1800s where you're sort of forced to do some shady stuff to make ends meet and pay that cow off or whatever? Like, that's really interesting to me. So I am perfectly jazzed, Jaime. I assume you'll tear through this like you did the other
I will devour this like nachos.
Yeah.
It'll just go to town.
I know what I want for dinner now.
Yeah, no, me too.
I can't wait for the, you know, 6-7 pages on recycling technology and stuff like that. I really miss the farming bits of science that were not in the movie for obvious reasons. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I think he has a way of making the most tedious science into an interesting thing. Yeah. You know, just the whole idea of the atmosphere recycling in The Martian, and how, you know, it he kept solving the problems and they kept breaking. I can't wait what he will do with the moon colony. You know, I can see that becoming a citadel at some point.
Yeah, me too. So Nancy, do you think, I mean, what's the pressure like on him? He's got to come back with his second, his sophomore effort, and to match the expectations must be brutal.
Just a little bit of pressure. Luckily, he's not doing another, you know, early exploration faux pas sort of story. Now he's firmly got a colony on the moon. Yeah. I don't know. I'm as I was listening to you guys talking, I'm just having flashbacks to my childhood and reading Arthur Clarke and all the other hard science and Larry Niven and all. I love that stuff. And I want more. And it seems like we've gone through a dry spell in the last decade where we didn't get a lot of really top drawer hard sci-fi like that. And like, bring it on and make another movie.
Yeah. It does feel like we're in a new era for that, Tom. Like, I don't know. As much as The Expanse has got its swashbuckly, weird crew in space sort of vibe, which is fun and loose and Star Warsy, there's a big science backbone to those books that makes
And there's plenty of people who've been continuing that tradition, like Kim Stanley Robinson, for instance, but they were almost always heritage authors and they were almost always under the radar.
Yeah.
So their following that they had built up knew about their books, but nobody else really talked about them. And that's what's changing, is we're seeing new authors like Andy Weir come into this and James S.A. Corey. And that's really exciting. And we're going to get another movie. 20th Century Fox and New Regency, along with genre films producers Simon Kinberg and Aditya Sood, have acquired the rights to Artemis already. And that's the same team that brought you The Martian movie.
That's great.
Perfect.
That's great. That'll be totally fine. I will watch the hell out of that for sure.
Hellboy creator Mike Mignola confirmed on Facebook that R-rated Hellboy movies are being planned. They're going to reboot Hellboy. Neil Marshall of Game of Thrones fame will direct. He directed several episodes of that. And David Harbour, who, if you don't recognize the name, you might recognize him as Jim Hopper from Stranger Things. David Harbour will be Hellboy.
He's the sheriff there, right?
Yep, yeah, that's him.
Perfect head and face for that, man. Like, I like me some Ron Perlman a whole lot, but he's had his time. He can go do other things. He can do other stuff. Let's get Jim Hopper in there. That guy's got the face for Hellboy. He's got the attitude, the voice, everything you need Hellboy to be under that makeup. I think Jim Hopper's your man. And R-rated. I'm telling you, I know I keep bringing this up on the show, But when I said after Deadpool succeeded, and everyone else, yep, and their dog said this, but it was, it just became so obvious to me that properties like Hellboy and Logan to some extent and others like them, where there's a bit of an adult bent to them, we were going to start to see way more of that, and they were going to be more comfortable just saying, well, let's just go R.
Yeah, we, it made it an option. Whereas, yeah, before, yeah, it would just be like, no, you can't do that.
Sure. And it's not even like Hellboy is like this, you know, super adult content, really. It's just, I don't know, it's a little more violent, a little more...
Well, it just gives you the freedom to write it however you think it needs to be.
Yeah. We got any Hellboy fans in the house here, Nancy or Jaime? Either of you big fans?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, we love the Hellboy at this house. I'm sorry that they didn't get to do a third film with Guillermo del Toro's team. I like everybody he had in his cast. I think it would have been lovely. I'm not sure what happened. I guess he said that the studios just didn't want to give him the money that he wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And so it was done.
Yeah.
And he walked away.
It's too bad.
But, yeah.
I hear a rooster, and that's awesome. Is that a phone or a real rooster?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's Max.
Oh, that is awesome. I thought it was like that is so cool.
You thought I had smuggled it from Mexico.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Hi, mate, what have you
thought you were going to have a Scott Johnson show without a Fury Road reference.
That's
you
right.
Were wrong.
That's right.
That's who he's named after.
That's exactly
that's
right.
Max, what is it, Rokotowski or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, that is literally his name. That's amazing.
Yep. That's okay. My rooster. That's one of them. I have two, but that's Max.
Nancy, that is 100% the right thing to have done.
So wait, well, it's done. Not morning. What is he crowing at?
Yeah.
Because he can.
He's just a vampire.
He's proud. He's like, I'm Max Rokotansky.
Like, yeah. It's like, yeah, you know, I got all my girls out here in the yard and I'm telling the whole world how what a great
crowing brings all the hens to the yard.
That's right.
Exactly what it does.
That's amazing. I'm so glad he did because I don't know why it made the show better. That's, well done.
Max, dude, he was quiet all day and he's like, oh, you're on the
don't
air?
Feel bad. This is the best. I mean, like a baby crying might annoy some people. A dog barking could bother some people. But a rooster crowing? How many podcasts get to have a rooster crowing in the background for free?
No, it's an honor.
Yeah.
It's an
honor.
We
actually had somebody email us and say, where do you get that rooster sound effect? That's a really nice touch. I was like, that's not a sound effect. Yeah. That's the guy outside my window.
I get it from my rooster?
Yeah.
Sorry, I have no control over that, really.
That's great.
You have to be very careful because Disney owns that.
Oh, do they? They've got that particular sound effect? Great.
No,
this is a free-range sound effect.
Nice. Hellboy, bring it. Let's do it.
Movement towards more adult stuff is very interesting. Me and my son, we've been watching the new Samurai Jack, which has moved to Adult Swim. And I think it has improved. It's possible that they that there is a little bit of a tendency to be more violent than you would otherwise be. But at the same time, I think that when for example Jack has this battle with actual living creatures, it's more intense. It's the stakes are way higher.
Yeah. I mean, Tartakovsky used to talk about how they'd make him do like the robots and it had to be oil and not blood. You know, he had to make all these concessions, which in some ways is kind of cool because there's a lot of creativity in that. But this feels like they're unleashed a little bit and they can kind of make what they want to make. So I agree. That's a good example.
So I imagine that that's what you know, Hellboy is going to look like.
Sure.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, Devilman.
I just hope they don't go crazy with it and do the HBO thing and just have violence for the sake of.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's true.
You can't spell Hellboy in that HBO.
Yeah. Oh, we can have boobs and butts. It's rated R.
That's a great line, Tom. That's today's. That's got to be today's thing. You can't spell Hellboy without HBO. That's really good.
Hey, I want to talk a little about the Sony TPSL2. That was the first cassette playing Sony Walkman. And of course the model shown being used by Peter Quill in both Guardians of the Galaxy movies, and they are in demand on eBay these days. NME.com had a story about it. They're going for hundreds of dollars, in some cases thousands of dollars. Lots of them are selling broken ones to cosplayers who are like, you don't need it to work, you know, you just want to put it on your hip, that's fine. The original TPSL2 sold for $200 on July 1st, 1979.
Yeah, I had one of those.
Now it's just now selling for more than it originally cost.
I had one of those 2 years after that. I was very young, and it was a secondhand gift. Somebody had already owned it for a couple of years, and it still worked, but I had it for a while. I got rid of it and bought one of those Sony. Where is it? It's, I have it over here somewhere. It's a Sportsman Walkman.
Yes. The yellow one.
Yeah, the yellow one that was like water resistant and stuff. And you put the batteries like inside where the cassette was and everything. It was really weird. Right. And I loved that thing. And I still have it. It still works. But that's not worth jack because Peter Quill's not using a cool one. He's using this old original 79 model, which is kind of a bummer. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Does anyone have one of these laying around? You guys can make a little
money? Brother had one. Yeah. And I want to just call him and say, listen, you have some of that junk. You know, I can help you get rid of it. Yeah, man.
I love that idea. It's great. My kids won't stop playing the soundtrack, so there's a lot of that going on around here. And the funny thing I've noticed, and this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but the soundtrack to both Volume 2 and the first movie are great, but the reason they're great, they're good songs for their time and what they are and all that, okay? But nobody was waiting around for Boom Shang a Long Dong or whatever this new one is. Nobody was like, oh, I can't wait for that to make a big comeback. Why it works is because they're playing it while there's a huge space battle or they're fighting a giant creature or there's this weird juxtaposition of strange Marvel cosmic thing happening versus 1978 slow hit from, you know, whatever band.
Well, and I think there's a little bit of that Quentin Tarantino effect where he had a sense of when to bring a song back that hadn't been heard.
Yeah.
Right. It's a song you never hear. And suddenly you're like, oh, I remember that. And then you combine that with that space battle and it really has an impact.
Yeah. And even the ones you don't remember, there's something about the combination that's so discordant, but awesome that it sticks with you. And now I can't get them to stop listening to it. They act like it's the greatest music in the world. And I'm like, you guys, it's existed for every second of your life. You've never listened to it before.
Playing in the grocery store when you were 7 years old, yeah. And you ran out crying.
Yeah, Break the Chains by Fleetwood Mac. Maybe is the exception because I've heard a lot of Fleetwood Mac because of me. But you know, for most of that stuff, it's like these weird, oddball, one-hit wonder things that they would never hear otherwise. And so, I guess James Gunn and crew should be thanked, certainly by whoever gets royalties for those songs. I hope some family somewhere of some long dead blues song maker who never saw much of a dime for his great work is getting like big time payments now. I don't know if that's how it works or not, but that'd be really cool. You know?
No, record executives are getting big time payments. So that's how
it works. That was how it works. Great. Yeah. Great. Yeah. It's I'm torn though. I don't know. Let's have a quick vote. Nancy, do you think the soundtrack in Guardians 2 is as good or better than the soundtrack in Guardians 1?
I think it's pretty equivalent. Mm-hmm. They're I'm not well versed in my pop music, especially so a lot of the songs were new to me. Yeah. So that was fun. ELO, of course, I love, and I thought it was awesome that they opened with Mr. Blue Sky, so that was fun.
That was really good. But, that's true.
I thought the music was a little more diegetic this time around. I think in the first movie it was like, oh, this is happening, and sometimes he was definitely playing it on his machine, but other times it just sort of happened. And then it was more self-consciously diegetic in the second one. It was like, oh, look, we are now plugging in this boombox. Oh, would you turn on that one song? And that was fine. It worked for me too.
Yeah,
it seemed more self-conscious this time.
How about you, Jaime? Do you like the new stuff?
Yeah, I think the music in 2 is better in general. However, I think it had a lesser impact because, you know, one, you didn't know what you were going to get. And it out comes this very, you know, classic soundtrack in this very futuristic movie. And I think in this one, they had to punch it up just to keep up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like they got more money this time because the songs were a little more mainstream and recognizable than the last one. The last one felt like maybe they got some pretty good bargains.
Right.
To its success, I mean. I actually think that works to get these really obscure
James Gunn
ones.
Said he just picked songs that he thought fit.
Really?
So I don't know if the licensing had anything to do with it or not.
Him and his brother. And
one of them was actually suggested by a fan. He had someone send him a suggestion. He has lots of suggestions that get sent to him, and he actually used one of them. I just listened to another podcast the other day, the soundtracking with... can't remember her name.
Oh, that sounds like a cool show. That sounds like a cool show. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, nice interview with Gunn, and he talked about his choices and why and how he actually got a lot of suggestions after Volume 1, and he ended up using one of them.
I could be wrong, Tom. I feel like James Gunn's a pretty open dude to, like, you know, new media and stuff or whatever we're doing these days. I don't know why we couldn't get him on the show. Let's see if we can get James Gunn. Hey, Hammond.
Yeah, come on, Hammond.
Yeah, get on that James Gunn tip. There's no he seems like a nice guy. He's putting his friends in his movies. His brother's always there.
Oh, he's great.
Get him between projects quick.
Yeah, he seems nice.
A bunch of us met him at DragonCon the other day.
Yeah, I hear he's super, super nice, right? Like real friendly. And wait, the other day. Oh, the other year, you mean?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Yeah.
It's a number of days.
Yeah, you know.
Just a couple days ago, we were hanging out. That's how it worked.
As one does.
Yeah.
Well, Current Geek covers everything. We don't limit ourselves. We cover games, we cover movies, we cover tech, we cover stamps. The August 21st solar eclipse is being commemorated by the U.S. Postal Service with a stamp printed in thermochromic ink. That means when you rub the stamp, the friction from your finger transforms the image from the 2006 total eclipse as shot from Jalu, Libya, to a photo of the full moon. And both photos were taken by Fred Espinac, who is also known as Mr. Eclipse of Portal, Arizona.
It's because he drives a Mitsubishi Eclipse. Is that why?
Yeah. And then he's like, you know what I should also do is take pictures of eclipses.
So do they cost the same? I'm trying to see here. It doesn't say in the article. I wonder.
It's just one stamp. Yeah, it's a regular stamp.
Okay.
It's just the one.
All right. Well, I would love to have that. I think that's a cool thing. Who'd have known that one day... Like, go back in time.
But here's the thing. It starts to not work if you leave it in direct sunlight for too long. So they're selling it with a special filter that you can keep it in. And like, this is meant for collecting. This is not meant for
people. Right.
Yeah, that's true. Who's going to stick this on here and have it go through our mail system? That would be dumb. But that's pretty awesome.
It's thermochromic, so it's a mood stamp.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that what that is? Is that what that's like those old mood stone things
you could temperature sensitive?
Oh, those were so. I remember when I was younger, I actually fell for
Luna Oscura.
I remember falling for it when I was younger. I was like, oh, look at that. What does it mean if it's red? Oh, that means you're a real lover and you're going to find a girl this weekend and like this kind of stuff. And I remember thinking, this is so cool. I can't believe it. Our temperatures tell us everything. It was complete hokum.
I would like to encourage everybody, if they can make it to the sun of the eclipse, to go.
Yeah,
it is spectacular. Whenever you know, totality is overwhelming.
I'll bet.
We had an eclipse when I was younger, and it was very strange. All the birds ran away and went to nests or whatever. And then when totality hit. And you could see that, you know, big ball of flame. After that, we all wanted to do stuff. We went and climbed a mountain or something, because it's such a giant event.
Yeah, you became moon people, really.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yep. Well, because
a giant creature eats the sun, as science told us, and then disgorges it again. Only if we, you know, give it the proper vibes.
Proper sacrifice.
Yeah. No, I understand that. You got to give a dog or a cat these
days. That's just science.
Yeah.
That's just science.
Now, accept it.
The interesting thing for a total eclipse is not necessarily the dark part. It's you know, it looks like a regular eclipse, and then suddenly you just get the corona, and the corona is just crazy. It looks like some sort of CGI in the sky.
All right. So August 21st, I'm gonna get a 6-pack of Corona.
Drive over in a Mitsubishi Eclipse and you're all set. Yeah. Last time I did it was when I was a kid, and they had you do the box or whatever so you could see it without burning a hole in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember being really disappointed by the quality of the image. So I would really like to see something better next time, like actual telescope.
You can just watch it online.
Or that.
Yeah, you can watch online. Although you shouldn't watch an eclipse happening. You should watch it on TV. But once it's total, you can see it with your own eyes.
Where's it going to be totally visible?
Let's see.
If you stare at the sun long enough now without an eclipse, it'll look like you always have an eclipse from now on the rest of your life. You just look at anything, and it'll be a big black hole right in the middle. It's pretty good.
You'll also lay an egg.
All right. I like the visual I'm getting on that. Nice. All right.
I think it's Missouri, Wyoming, South Carolina, and Idaho.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Those are supposed to be the hot spots.
Nice stretch.
I'm close to those areas. I could get up there and see that.
Yeah.
It's a line.
Well, I want to thank not only Tom for delivering these messages, but a lot of these stories come to us because you people out there listening voted for them on our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com. Tom, who are some of the fine folks that contribute?
Oh, yeah. All of our stories came from the subreddit this week. And thanks to everybody who gets in there and submits them and votes. Our rooster is crowing. in appreciation for you. Sewell 2, Strike It Rich 1, Jeff Rose, Strike It Rich 1, and another Jay Martin. Okay, Strike It Rich 1 submitted two of these. But thanks, everybody, for submitting.
Yeah. Also,
currentgeeks.reddit.com. Get over there.
And also, another Jay Martin's name continues to be funny out of context. All right. Well done, everybody. Hey, we take a minute in our episode every week, and we let our guests talk about some of the projects that they're working on, things they're up to. Not really plugged so much as they are just, hey, this is what I'm doing. Let's start with Nancy. Nancy, what are you up to these days?
All kinds of crazy stuff. The timing of being here is actually kind of perfect. I worked on a feature film a year or so ago, and it just released on iTunes, and I think you can get it by disc on Netflix. But if you put it in your queue, it'll help us get into, they might consider us for streaming. Mm. It's a gothic horror film called Seven Witches.
Ooh.
And I'm one of the scary witches in it, and my husband Gordon, who I make do podcasts every week, he is the patriarch of the witch clan. He just stands around and looks grumpy, which is good for him.
Yeah.
Easy. And
it's
beautifully shot, kind of fun film.
Oh, here it is, Seven Witches trailer. There's a trailer on YouTube, everybody, if you want to go check the trailer out.
I'm kind of proud of it. I worked on a lot of indie films over the years, and most of them never see the light of day. Not only is this one seeing the light of day, but it's got good distribution and it's really beautifully done.
Well, here's my favorite part. The synopsis goes, as their big day approaches, Kate and Cody should be celebrating. Their families are there. They've rented an island for the big day, but unbeknownst to them, their wedding falls on the day when the 100-year-old curse comes to fruition.
Oh, man, we should have checked that.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Should have looked that
who's
up.
Who's that wedding planner?
Yeah, who's in charge here? This is ridiculous. Well, that's awesome. And at the end of the show, we'll make sure people have all the links and stuff they need to track more of your work down. Anything else going on?
Yes. What's the difference between being an actress in Seattle and the jobs you can take and get versus being in Hollywood and Los Angeles and all of that?
You're not going to make a living doing it up here. There just isn't work, especially the age I am. I'm not old enough to be granny, and I'm not young enough to be the debutante. Mm-hmm. I'm in that limbo for female actresses, and there just isn't a lot. Oh, Tom, you'll like this. One of the actresses with me in Seven Witches is McCall Dunhey Gordon from Man in the High Castle.
Fantastic.
She plays Juliana's mom on that. She's that red-haired lady.
Been in tons of stuff. I like her a lot.
Yeah, she's great. She plays a fabulous character in Seven Witches. She's like everybody's favorite aunt, just wisecracking, pot smoking, she's just a hoot.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's got a lot of good FaceTime in this. She really shines.
Do you think people do better in terms of Tom's question? Do you think if you live in like Vancouver or you live in Georgia, like Atlanta right now, are those places better for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of High Castle is shot in Vancouver. Everything goes to Canada right now because it's cheaper. We've chased a lot of work out of this country by just taxing everything to death and overcharging for things. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
My husband and I used to work on a lot of big feature films back in the day. He's a horse guy. He did background coordination and a lot of cavalry stuff. And that just dried up and went away. I think the last big thing he worked on was the Disney Alamo movie. Mm-hmm. Right before that, we did The Patriot. And then after that, everything was gone. We had one of the kids who worked with us on The Patriot flew right off from that movie to go work on Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. in New Zealand mm-hmm. and be a Nazgul and be a Rohirrim and all that stuff. So he had a lot of fun doing that. But then that was it. I mean, everything was going either New Zealand or Czech Republic or North Africa or anywhere where it was cheaper. But everything goes to Canada right now. So it's tough. There's a lot of indie stuff in Seattle. But part of my problem is I live a boat ride away from town. Mm-hmm. So to go to auditions and do things, yeah. I would really have to be committed to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just a dilettante. So
I just love the idea that you can get on a boat and go downtown.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, what you're describing to me is a dream come true. So
boats. I was a Sea Scout.
Boats are awesome.
Yeah, so that feature film's out. Check it out. I if you like horror movies, I think you'll enjoy it. It's kind of different. It's a little Lovecraftian.
Ooh,
so that's kind of a fun thing.
Yeah.
I also am in a steampunky radio drama called Brass. And season one has been out for almost a year now. We just finished work on season two. So that's with Battleground Productions. And it actually got picked up by like Alaska Public Radio or something. Oh, but wow. It's online. You can listen to it. It's on SoundCloud.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'm a big fan of the genre. I'd love to hear that. It's called Brass, you say.
Yeah. Yeah, Brass. All it's right. The family. It's Victorian England in a world where Prince Albert did not die. So Victoria is not a sad woman in mourning all the time. She's a happy, plucky, you know, queen with her lovely consort. And of course, it's steampunk, so there's all kinds of wonderful tech and whatnot. Oh, but it's a crime-fighting family, and I get to play a wonderful villain. So
Lots of fun. It is. I found it. You guys can just go to battlegroundproductions.org.
There you go.
And you'll run right into it. And look at the dude. You guys got like promo photos with all the gear on and everything. That's amazing.
Sure, why not?
I'm into this. This is great.
The guy who's the playwright behind it actually has made it a multi-platform thing. So we've got the audio drama, and then we've done stage productions. We do readings. They've done some little short films. We're going to be debuting a short film at the Port Townsend Steampunk Festival next month.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of fun.
All right. Well, awesome. It sounds like you got plenty going on. Again, we'll do some reminders at the end of the show and give people some proper links. Jaime, what are you working on these days? You still making holograms come to life, or what's going on?
Oh, yes. I'm doing all the things. I have this giant order of things that I have to deliver to people who were very, very kind to buy some on the internet. And I'm working on some research, interesting stuff that might turn into a product. There's this very cool technology called Raman spectrography, which basically means you shine a little light on a thing, any object, and it will tell you what it's made of. It's kind of
I thought it was pictures of ramen.
Yeah,
so.
I did too. That's why I was laughing.
Yeah, yeah. It's you measure the wavelengths of ramen.
the noodle
but
lengths.
You don't have to burn it like other kinds of spectrography.
Right. No, yes, you don't have to burn it. It's non-destructive.
Oh, that's great.
So you just shine a laser and then you analyze what comes back. It's incredibly cool. And that's very serious. And I might be thinking of adapting it to some sort of app and something you could use the phone and adapt it to the phone to get like a tricorder thing.
I was just going to say, that's a total tricorder.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Oh my gosh, you're the biggest nerd that comes on here. You know that, right? I mean that in the nicest possible way, because I'm always impressed with the crap you're working on. That's awesome.
It's a lot of stuff. I just have to recently moved and I just have to get organized and get things out.
Moving's the worst. I hate it. I hope I never do it again. There you go. All right. Well, we'll get some links for you as well at the end of the podcast.
For sure.
Before we go anywhere else, though, real quick, just to mention about our Crate Joy. What's that, you say? Well, let me tell you. You go to this site, frogpants.cratejoy.com, and you look there and you go, oh, I know what these are. They're like nerd boxes. People send you all kinds of cool stuff every month. How is yours different? Well, ours is different because it's very personal. And as you can see, I haven't even looked. I bet Tom's holding something up. He totally is. Oh, wait, you guys can't see it. Let me push this. Okay, there you go. Look at that. A mouse map made out of puzzle pieces, a print of a space dude. Some other stuff in his hand. He's almost giving me the bird with his one hand. Look at that. It's like another print and signed by me and everything. Every month you get signed prints. You get original artwork. You get stuff from our guests. You get all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't get anywhere else. There's a shot glass. Look at that. I just threw back. It's all great, and we love it, and you'll love it too. And it's a great way to support us. In fact, it is the primary way we fund this show. So please consider it, frogpants.cratejoy.com. It's simple. It's fast. And you'll love it.
And it's the law.
And it's the law. And we are a nation of laws, I hope. The pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, the pop quiz is a place where we get to ask questions of our guests in areas of their expertise. When they get answers right, they'll hear this. When they get it wrong, they'll hear this. And the whole time, Tom will keep score. At the end, we'll compare scores and see who won today's contest. We're going to start with the subject matter for Nancy. Nancy, are you ready for your topic?
I have to put my smart glasses on.
Good.
Okay.
Mine are also not here.
We'll allow
smart glasses. here are Nancy Fry's questions. They are in the area of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Woo!
Which I understand you're a big fan of, so this will be good.
Oh, I'm a total fan.
The topic was suggested by Hammond. They were compiled by Mike Icewarm Boyd. Big thanks to both of them for their hard work. And here is your first question. In what year did the show debut? the original show?
Oh, man. I know. I came in late. It was 88?
You are correct.
Boom. Whoa.
Right. Whoa. Out of the gate. My goodness. That's amazing. You don't need to take a boat into town for that. That was impressive. next question. What film was used on the show during the first episode shown on KTMA-TV? So which movie were they doing?
Was it season zero or season one? For KTMA. Oh, I don't know. I'm just going to guess The Crawling Eye.
You are incorrect. It is Invaders of the Deep.
Yeah, that was season zero.
Invaders
okay.
of the Deep. Next question. Tom Servo's head is a gumball machine. What was originally used for his torso? How would anyone know this?
Used for his torso?
I'm looking at this answer and I'm thinking, no one knows this. No one will know this.
Gumball machine for the head, but what about his body?
Yeah.
Body. It's a bank. I think it's a bank. It's a barrel-shaped bank.
Oh,
thing.
Tom, you're going to have to make a ruling on this. The answer is a money lover barrel coin bank.
Yeah.
And I think
a bank. She gets it right.
All right, she gets it.
A barrel-shaped
bank. She gets it. I knew it. That's why I asked. Well done. Next question. The second to last question, in fact. The show originally ended in 1999. What was the final film used for the original run?
The final film.
I watched it.
The transitional film was Mitchell, and the last film.
That's all I could think of too is Mitchell.
I know Mitchell, because it was just so memorable. I'm trying to think. Why don't I? It's right on the tip of my brain. It's the tip of the thing, and the. It's not Diabolique. And it's not The Last Sacrifice. I'm failing. I can't remember.
Tom, I'm going to ask you again about maybe a special deal here. I mean, technically, her not knowing is wrong. However, she did say diabolic in there, or diabolique, or however the heck you say it, and that is the correct answer.
Okay, so we're going to give her a half point, and here's why. She said it's not diabolique, which is wrong, but you also said it's not another movie, which is correct. And you said I don't remember, which is also correct.
Also correct.
So you actually get set 3/4 of a point.
Jeez, that's pretty good. That's
awesome.
By the way, I can't read that as anything because I'm a longtime Blizzard and Diablo fan. That just looks like Diablo lick to me. So
yeah,
not very good.
Mod.
Fine. That's why they quit doing mods in Diablo 3. They just said, nope, not that again. Here's your final question. The show recently had a revival and released a new season on Netflix. What was the first movie used in the Netflix version?
Just watched it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but I don't remember the name of it either.
That
movie with those people.
You know,
yeah,
that
the
movie
one.
With the thing.
The one with the thing and the stuff. It was all up in there.
Darn it. It's not Star Crash. And it's not the Avalanche one.
Star Crash is so good.
Crying out loud. Oh, I'm the worst fan ever. I should know. I can't remember.
Well, the answer to that is Reptilicus.
Reptilicus. It's a classic. Why couldn't I remember that?
Yeah, that's the one. All right. Well, you did well, I think. So hold on to that because now we'll see how Jaime does. Jaime, your topic is H.G. Wells.
Oh, my God. Okay.
We're going deep. Here's your first question. What year was H.G. Wells born?
Oh, my God. Let's say 1848.
You are incorrect, but you're in the right millennia or whatever. It's 1866 is the correct answer.
Oh, okay. Younger than I
yeah, so there you go. About 105 years older than me. Let's see. What,
doesn't look it, though.
No, not a day over.
Because you look so much older.
Okay.
What was H.G. Wells' first fiction novel to be published?
Things to Come?
You are incorrect. The answer is The Time Machine.
Really?
What about his romances?
I don't know. Maybe this question's bad. Maybe this is a horrible answer. Oh, Rooster has chimed in. Rooster says, cock-a-doodle-doo.
He doesn't know either.
He doesn't know either. He's saying, I don't know either.
I'm having a Terrible day.
Next question. What is the real name of the Invisible Man?
These are hard.
And I'll give you a hint.
These are very hard.
He is a... I'll give you a hint. He is a doctor. And so you could say... Doctor... Yeah. Like that.
Stevens? I have no idea.
Incorrect. It is Dr. Griffin is the correct answer. Griffin.
You're going to get a half point because you got half of his name right.
Yeah, well done. Stevens Griffin. The doctor part. You know, the part I gave you. All right, second to last question. Where was H.G. Wells born?
This is... I mentioned I like science fiction. From... in general...
I love it. This is how we like for this guy.
I'll give you the most difficult trivia about the oldest science fiction author we can drink up.
Yes. They would be pieces of information.
Next week, Jules Verne.
You know what? I'm going to say
insert British countryside place here.
He's pretty right about that. I don't know. Tom, you tell me. Bromley, Kent, United Kingdom. What are you going to give
him? Oh, yeah. No, it's a British countryside place. Perfect
answer. Well done. Good answer. Okay. Get a full point for that. Final question. Where did H.G. Wells go to college?
H.G. Wells from Warehouse 13 or the H.G. Wells, the author?
H.G. Wells, the author.
I will assume that he went to Cambridge, and I will assume that he went to King's College.
You are so close. Not really, though. Royal College of Science is the correct answer.
Oh, jeez.
You get a third of a point for naming colleges.
Yeah, well done.
There we go.
They were great with the science. They had a terrible football team. Anyway, well done.
I feel now I know what people feel when they play this game. It's a new experience for me.
You will feel it again one day again. So don't worry.
Yes,
we like having you back. Tom, their answers are in. How'd they do?
Final score was Jaime 1.8, Nancy 3.25.
Well done, Nancy. You don't have to get on a boat. I have no more boat jokes. That's all I got. I can't do it anymore.
I'm not on a boat.
No.
You don't have to get on a boat, but you can't stay here.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. Well, that leads us as ever so elegantly into the area we like to call forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
We like to predict the future about technology, pop culture, life, whatever, society, doesn't matter how far or how short into the future we go, we like to do it. And sometimes our guests provide these, sometimes we do, and this time we do. Tom does, in fact. Tom, do you want to tell us what your prediction is?
Yeah, so I was trying to think of a prediction and the garbage truck rolled by, and I thought, you know what? Someday, new technology will take all of our refuse. So the garbage we have, the food scraps, the recycling, the yard waste, all of it, and we'll process it on site at the place where we live into energy and material byproducts. Mm. The energy obviously powers, you know, the things that you need around your house. And the byproducts will be boiled down to particular elements they probably won't be boiled. They'll be burned. But anyway, they'll be turned into particular elements that you can use in your 3D printer.
Oh.
So it'll power your house, fill your material needs with the minimum of waste, and any excess material or energy you have can be sold off.
Okay, so is it just like a Mr. Fusion? You just go out and throw it in the back, throw it in a hatch or something, and then it just does
its
thing?
Yeah, no more sorting your recycling. Everything just goes in the dump, and it goes down to the magic box, which turns it into energy and material.
I love
this.
And
the material can be fed right back into your 3D printers.
Are you worried that it would be your house would essentially be sitting on top of a super hydron collider or like a nuke station?
No, man, this thing doesn't have to be nuclear.
Okay, could it just be, okay, all right. So it could just be...
Not actually Mr. Fusion.
Okay. All right. So we don't need the Libyans or their precious...
No, thank goodness okay. For once.
All right. They'll chase you in a van by the mall. All right. Guess, thoughts, Nancy, our future of wasteless, whatever Tom described.
Yeah, I think that sounds awesome. And I think it's definitely a possibility. From my perspective, I live in a pretty rural area, so we do a lot of recycling of what the chickens don't eat and we don't eat goes in the compost or gets burned, or we have a transfer station not too far from us that takes recycling. So we recycle a lot, and basically we don't have much trash left over at the end of the day. So there is some, and it would be, and I always feel bad. I was like, well, this little bag of stuff's going in the landfill, you know, nobody can make anything out of it. And, But what if you could break down that old drywall and those rusty nails and and plastics that won't recycle.
Yeah,
and,
or old computer crap that I don't want to go find a place for, or don't want to do the pickup for, or whatever. Just be able to throw like a, you know, like an old screen and computer into a pit and have it do its thing, and then suddenly
And like rare earth metals and things from your electronics would be separated out and could be sold off. You wouldn't use them, but they could be sold off to computer companies that then make new computer parts.
Yeah, and they could come out in like little bricks, or little cylinders and stuff, right? Like
You could make new stuff, new electronics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I really.
We just need a cost-effective way to break down those constituent molecules, so we can get.
That's the futuristic part of this.
Right.
I think most of it just probably gets burned, probably, and then there's a device that can sort out all the materials.
Sure.
Or cheaply. If you wanted to go, because the way this would work really well is if you had a generic material that can do all kinds of different things, you know, it can work in different properties or you could have a bunch of little tiny robots.
Nanobots,
but their only function is to attach to others. And so what your device is, it just, you know, breaks the bonds and imparts a different.
Right. So they're just basically mining your trash.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like bacteria.
And then eventually, they unionize, and then you have to send in little Pinkerton bots.
Yeah, Pinkerton bots to fight them off. Exactly. But wouldn't
tiny nano sticks?
That's the lost chapter to Diamond Age didn't write.
Yeah, there's a nano Woody Guthrie down there.
But you're basically describing like good bacteria in the digestive system, like its ability to break things down and put them in their proper place. But in the case of this, you're talking about nanites and raw materials, and that would be
Or you could have the raw materials be the nanites themselves. You could have they just hold on to others and they make different structures.
Yeah, I'm in.
Some time ago this all felt like science fiction. I'm telling you, there's stuff that they're doing in the labs that is very, very similar to this.
Wow, really? See, I knew you'd know. You got all this science stuff, man. You know stuff.
Yeah, dude. I've just returned to research recently, and they've gone nano. Everything is nanofabrication.
Hmm. So. Wow. All right. You're also the only true scientist who's ever referred to me as dude, which I like a lot. I like that. Never stop doing that. It's great. All right. Well, there's your predictions. Good one this time. I think it actually helps humanity instead of my dumb ones about robots and androids and things. So well done, Tom. We have one final thing. That is an email from someone calling themselves El Chappie. I'm going to assume they are not related at all to El Chapo, who's in.
No, this is a much more friendly version.
Yeah, he's not going to do things to us. It says here, dear current geek and friends, that's you guys, our guests. El Chappie here with a thought regarding the Blade Runner sequel. There was a trailer. Was it this week or last week? I don't remember when we got
it. It was on Monday.
Monday. There seems to be, this is the Blade Runner 2 trailer. There seems to be a slavish attempt to keep the look, feel, sets, tone, and music right in line with the first one. Does this make you guys happy or worry it won't take enough chances? I think he put changes, but chances. From El Chappie. Well, El Chappie, I had this exact thought, but in a much more positive way. It doesn't worry me. In fact, it really excites me. The trailer looked like it just got filmed at the end of that other movie. The only difference is being, you know, Decker's much older. Other than that, like the neon, it's very quick, but you still see giant Atari logos in the middle of the city. Which is nuts because they thought Atari would be this futuristic brand and it's like nothing now, but still it's in there. The tones,
brands come back sometimes, right?
That's true. Yeah, you never know. No. I mean, and Atari exists. They're just in a way different form. So maybe they could do whatever. But I love that adherence to that. The music sounds like Vangelis. Like it's straight up Blade Runner from top to bottom. I already love that director. I loved every movie I've ever seen him make. So I have high hopes for all of it. Like for me, I don't have any worries. I don't worry that they're not going to take any chances. I think this is just a chance to, I don't know. I mean, it is a little like, drag Harrison Ford out to do another one of his old movies, everybody. So there is a little of that.
It kind of depends on what you want. Do you want it to be in line with the original and carry on that tone? And then this is what you're going to like. If you're like, you know what? I wanted them to change everything and take off in a whole new direction. Then maybe you aren't going to like this.
Yeah. Seems as simple as that.
I don't know. I think that from what I've seen of it, it does seem to be the same world, but it does seem to be in greater decay. I remember that the first time I saw it, it felt strange and jumbled, but it seemed to be in its ascendancy. And right now, there's a lot of dust. There's a lot of stuff that might not be as nice as it could have been.
And, you know, spoiler alert for people who don't want to know a single thing about the movie, who haven't watched the trailer.
Yeah.
But the description on the trailer, so this isn't, you know, spoiling from special knowledge, says that there has been an incident. There has been something happening.
Right.
That has caused not an apocalypse, but has caused this breakdown that Jaime's talking about.
Oh, interesting.
I think we're a lot more concerned nowadays than we used to be with the idea of thinking machines and what their rights are, what they're, you know, what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and I think that's a reflection on us as a civilization on the verge of AI.
Yeah, I think the cast looks amazing. Nancy, from a actor's perspective, how do you feel about Gosling and all those people? They all look like they're going to fit just fine.
I just judging on the merits of the trailer alone, I think I wouldn't call it slavish. I think they're definitely trying to keep a similar tone to the original, which is great. Yeah. And so far, it looks like they're succeeding. And I think it was kind of a brave thing to do the Atari logo, considering. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing they will never even address it. It's just going to be there.
Yep.
And, I think Gosling looks fine. Some people are saying, oh, he just seems really wooden. It's like, yeah, it's the trailer.
Yeah, it's also Blade Runner. And Blade Runner, half the reason Runner was cool is because it's noir and people straight face everything. It's just kind of the way they do things.
Yeah, if you want wacky melodrama, this is not the place for it.
Sure. Also, do you like, I like how there's everything feels, nothing in that trailer jumped out at me and said, oh, we're in the CGI age, everybody. Everything felt really practical, even though I know some of that's not going to be. Some of that stuff's definitely going to be cheaper and more efficacious to say, well, let's do this CGI, floating car through the city thing. But it didn't look like it. And I'm glad that we're at a place now where we can just be more subtle, you know, and it doesn't feel like it's, ooh, look at the special effects on display. It's more like, now, sometimes I like that. Like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, that's what that is. It's like, guys, guess what? Everything's computer generated and you're going to love it. And you do. It's like the perfect application for it. But something like this needs a lighter touch. And I came away with that. It's a 2-minute view, so probably not enough. But
if they can keep it a character-oriented story like the original, then that's great. Because, of course, you have to set it in that world. And what was kind of unique about the original Blade Runner was that it was the first film, I believe, that hired an actual futurist to help with the production design. And it's like, what will these, you know, forecast? What will cars be like 100 years from now? What will computers be like? What will apartments, what will the flatware and the glasses and the clothes? I mean, they hired an actual futurist guy to come up with his concepts for this stuff. Yeah. And they're keeping with that. And I was just thrilled to see Dave Bautista in there for half a second too.
Yeah, right.
Hey, more Dave Bautista.
I didn't know he was in it, so that was a nice surprise.
Yeah, I had
no idea. And then they could bring back. I saw Harrison Ford in his jeans and his T-shirt, and I thought, geez, man, don't come to don't go too crazy with the wardrobe or anything. But I kind of
watching the game.
part of me was like, hey, we're gonna get to see Edward James Olmos maybe in a return, or probably not. But like, there are a few actors are still around still. I wouldn't mind seeing cameos. I mean, I know the character's not there, but Rutger Hauer could show up as a different dude, all covered in something. That'd be all right.
Sure.
Get him while he's still alive is all I'm saying. You know, these guys are getting old. We got to try to get him in there.
It's very surprising how good in general Philip K. Dick movies are. Even if the stories and the books and the original stuff is gets a little heavy at some point and gets a little crazy.
Yeah.
It's
so adaptable. Yeah.
Yes.
His work is so adaptable.
And that'll be the biggest thing for me is that Blade Runner, as do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, is very appealing to me, even though it's so different, because I'm such a fan of Philip K. Dick's work. This is not based on Philip K. Dick at all. So let's see where they go. Man on the High Castle season two is the same way, right? It was departing from the things in the book, and they did a great job. So I'm pretty optimistic about this.
Yeah. No, I think the Man in the High Castle, I think, though, is in the spirit of that BKD paranoia, right? There's this, am I here? Am I there? Is this happening? It's not.
Yeah, but once again, you're seeing how it's that part can be captured without having to adhere to it exactly, and they can just adapt in a way that's maybe as good or better in some ways and not as good in others, but it's like really expands on it. Like, I wish this was more of, maybe we'll get this with Dark Tower, but I kind of wish more Stephen King work was this way, and some of it is. Like, Shawshank Redemption is a very different book. I read that book. It's a short story anyway. But besides that, it's very different than the movie, but really good. And the movie's amazing. One of the best movies ever made. And it seems like when they approach them this way, we get better results. So, slavish adherence, maybe he's got, I guess what I'm saying is maybe El Chapi's got a point. Maybe that's going to be, I'm not saying it will be, and we shouldn't have any reason to think this.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it slavish, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean,
a replicant of appearance.
Yeah. What are we talking, like October, I guess? So we got
incept dates.
Yeah.
So I have not read any spoiler stuff besides the thing. So if Decker's alive, that means he's not, right?
I don't know. I never see there's like, which version are we talking about? Like, if it's directors and they say that's the closest thing, or is it the other director's one that was like even longer, or are we going with the narrated weird first one with a different ending? Like,
maybe he was the model because he was undetectable that could live beyond the incept date.
Maybe he was the special version.
He's a Cylon.
October 6th is when it comes.
Okay. Yeah. He's like
that's my birthday. My incept date.
Yeah.
I will go see this movie because I will finally see the mercerism empathy movie that I want to see.
There you go. Get ready, everybody. Brown everywhere. Maybe. Yeah. Well done, emailer. El Chapi, thank you so much. Anybody else out there wants to send emails in? We love them. We read them and we talk about them, as you can see right here. CurrentGeek@gmail.com. It's going to about do it for us. But before we go, let's let our guests point people in the right web URL directions for their lives. Let's start this time with Jaime. Jaime, where can people go to find you and more of you?
For now, go to @TensorGuy on Twitter. And also, if you want to see some of my more collegiate musings about being an old guy in a research institution, cool Jaime.
All right. Very nice.
On Twitter. At Old School Jaime.
Old School Jaime. There you go. It's spelled like Jamie, everybody, just so you know.
With J-A-I-M-E.
Yeah, that. Because, I screwed it up last time, and I need to make sure to screw it up even more now that you're here again.
That's fine.
Anyway, Jaime, it's always a pleasure. Nancy, where can people find you and your fine work?
I'm on Twitter, @Nebutron. That's my handle. And you can find me, of course, places we've already talked about. I'm over at the SciCon Network, which is Brecky podcast network.
Yeah.
And we all here?
Looks like her microphone changed back to the other one again. Weird.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
still?
I can still hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Who knows why?
The last couple of minutes, anyway. We have really nice warm mic sound coming out of you now. It's crazy. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, good, good. Okay, I'm ready for my FM spot. Yeah. Yeah. Where was I? At Nebutron on Twitter. I'm at SciCon. We have a podcast called The History Files. This is where I put my historian husband in front of a microphone and make him talk about history because he's great at it. And we also have a shorter show called What's in a Name, where we do the origins of the name of a place or thing. We've got another show too there. So we've got three shows over at SciCon. And we are also characters in tabletop games. For Flying Frog and for cheap ass games, we just ended up modeling for video or for tabletop games, and so
nice.
We're kind of all
that's
them.
So cool. Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know about that. Awesome. Well, yeah, check all that out as well. Nebutron. How do you spell Nebutron? I'm getting it wrong.
N E B U T R O N.
E B. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it now. There we are. All right. Now I can see you.
I submitted a short film with the cow in it a couple of months ago.
Oh, right. Okay. No, that was you with the cow.
Yeah, that was me with the cow.
All right. Well, you're living one of my dreams. I mean, I either want to live out with chickens and cows in the middle of nowhere, or I want to live at the top of a high rise. And you're living the one end dream for me.
Two extremes.
It's all the middle part that's boring. I like the two extremes.
It's our neighbor's cow. She just wanders over and eats our grass, and that's fine.
Great. Don't worry about your weird cats in the neighborhood. It's just think what if a cow came over and started eating your bushes or whatever. Anyway, Tom Merritt, anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Just a quick reminder that Twin Peaks returning to Showtime May 21st, 25 years later. And we are following that at damnfinepodcast.com. Ron Richards and I have been rewatching all of Twin Peaks. We're going to rewatch Fire Walk With Me. And then on May 21st, we're going to start using that podcast to follow along with the new series. So if you're into Twin Peaks, check it out, damnfinepodcast.com.
Very nice. For everything else you may need to find and know and have on this show, go to currentgeek.com. All our links are there. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, based on a popular Ars Technica article in the subreddit from frequent contributor Sewell2, we cover this IP lawyer's perspective on why the nerdy t-shirt market thrives in an economy with tons of intellectual property. Just over 2 years ago on this segment, I discussed why small fan art and good sellers at summer game and comic conventions often fall under the radar and avoid copyright and trademark infringement claims. The Ars Technica article is basically about the same subject, except that t-shirt sellers are more prominent overall and do what appears to be good business online and at booths in these conventions, selling millions of dollars of product every year. Often, the shirts include well-known characters, logos, or sayings, usually with some additional twist. So the question posed is a good one. How does this industry stay in business despite the constant threat of trademark or copyright infringement enforcement? The first answer provided in the article is that many of these shirt sellers keep no significant inventory, only printing different designs from artist submissions every day or week, and only based on actual consumer demand. Although this is still technically IP infringement in some cases where fair use does not apply, the lack of a constant money stream from any one IP makes it nearly worthless for an IP owner to try and stop the sales after the fact, or recover the profits from the small amount of sales that have been made. The business model is tailored to keep moving the target, which is wise from an IP standpoint. A second answer provided is that these websites comply with all DMCA takedown notices promptly, just like other user-generated content sites like YouTube. With copyright infringement being the potential biggest threat, thanks to the potential for large statutory damages instead of lost profits and the like, compliance with the DMCA seems to be a great idea in the current IP market. Of course, the DMCA covers the digital marketing and display of the shirt images, and the actual sales themselves or the artist making the work could still be pursued for infringement, so it's not really the perfect solution for protecting the t-shirt business. The third answer was provided in a similar manner as I did on this segment before, that the actual money involved is small enough to not be worth pursuing in many cases, especially considering the fan backlash that happens against the original IP owner for enforcing their rights. It's just the economic reality of IP law and enforcement. It's also why these types of cases have been limited to contexts such as the Star Trek Axanar case, where a lot of money came in suddenly via crowdfunding and competed directly with the products of the original IP owner. The bottom line is, the Ars Technica article is correct in stating that it's a tangled web of business reality and legal defenses, such as fair use, that keep this t-shirt business afloat. Regardless, most of these IP owners aren't heavy into the t-shirt or apparel business, so they may not feel the need to fight over this ground. But make no mistake, a lot of this is actually IP infringement, and a business risk, even if the rights are not often enforced. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.